You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
I'm Anna Sale in for Leonard Lopate today. Iris Berry was one of the first film critics to see cinema as an art form worthy of analysis. She founded the Museum of Modern Art's Film Library and was its first curator. In the new book, Lady in the Dark, Iris Berry and the Art of Film, author Robert Sitton follows Berry from her bohemian life in London to her career as a film critic and curator. Lady in the Dark is published by Columbia University Press, and it's brought Robert Sitton to our studio today. Hello, Robert.
Hello. Welcome.
Let's start by talking about this woman's phenomenal life.
All right.
You quote Alistair Cook at the very start of your book, describing her as a brassy little girl from Birmingham, England, who shocked her grandmother by spending every spare hour at the movies.
Right.
This is in the very early 20th century, and her obsession was there from the start?
She really had a moment of transformation when she saw the original Les Mis in 1915. She had seen other things that she thought well of, but when she saw that film, and by the way, I can't find it. I'm looking for it desperately, but she said nothing counted higher than film from then on. But then when she got to London, she started as a poet and had such a varied career as a writer, a biographer, as a novelist, book critic, film critic, programmer, founder of societies, and the builder of the infrastructure of what we now know as the world of film, or film art, at least. When she got to London, she was invited by Ezra Pound. She'd been corresponding with him. And he said, you really shouldn't live on a farm. Let's see the city. Come to London. And there he introduced her to a phenomenal array of artists, poets, writers, and the like, of the sort of alternative Bloomsbury group, not the chic ones that one associates with Bloomsbury, but the rougher ragtag ones, like Wyndham Lewis and Pound himself, the vorticists, the wild men of art.
How did this young girl who was raised by her grandmother on an English farm get hooked up with Ezra Pound? How did that start?
She wrote her way out of Birmingham, basically. She was a convent school dropout. And she'd been kicked out of a couple of schools, really. And she wrote like an angel. That's one of the things that attracted me to her. And so she sent these poems to Pound, and Pound sent them to Poetry Magazine, insisted upon them being published, and thought that she was quite talented and could benefit from being in the demi-monde that he knew so well. And so he was her mentor in London in 1917, introduced her faithfully to Wyndham Lewis, the vorticist, bad boy, artist, writer, and madman. And she felt absolutely head over heels in love with this man.
It's trouble when you fall in love with a madman.
Oh, my God.
And they had a few kids together.
They had two children, a boy in 1919, a girl in 1920, which he never acknowledged. Of course, he didn't acknowledge any of his children. And it left Iris with a challenge for life. Career, not career, take care of the children, go back to Birmingham, what to do? And she compromised by letting the boy be cared for by her mother, and then finding a home for the girl in Manchester, a nice family there, and sort of placed them there. But oddly enough, never introduced them to one another as brother and sister until they were adults. And they then got to know each other and became lifelong friends. But she went out to find a career for herself as a writer, and was taken on at the Spectator. First writing decorative arts pieces, and then writing about this new phenomenon that was really considered a toy, motion pictures, and began to tell people in her column, this is not a toy, it's an art form. And people wondered, well, what do you mean by that? And the prevailing idea was that it would be an art form if it was something like painting. And so you have previous books like Vachel Lindsay's 1915 book, The Art of the Motion Picture, that fundamentally argues that there's a lot in common between film and painting. And so, therefore, we ought to respect this kind of thing. But the thing that Iris did, and it made her mind so sharp, was she knew this was a unique form of art, that it had may have some commonalities with other art forms, but there's something and some things that are different about it. And she articulated these differences with a great open mind and without prejudice, without ideological theory. We have theory now.
That was before. Yeah, yeah. Iris was building that theory. So Iris Berry, you say the love that she had for film. She had this passion when her grandmother died in her early 20s.
Right.
She said the saddest thing, apart from the selfish regret at her absence, was that she had never seen a Charlie Chaplin film.
Yes. She genuinely regretted that. She adored Chaplin, particularly the early Chaplin. Thought he was a master. And when she got together with Lewis and they lived together, he talked about Chaplin frequently. He took her to the movies with great seriousness. And he wrote about Chaplin, too, and took him seriously really quite early on. And it gave more ideas to Iris that, maybe this is a unique art form. And so she pursued that. And then in 1926, she put it all together in a wonderful book called Let's Go to the Pictures.
Let's Go to the Pictures is such a great name for a book about movie going and its joy and what it brings. It also has a sound inviting and populist. Mm-hmm. Where did Iris Berry come down on the question of art films versus, the bubbly crowd pleasers?
She felt that we should love this art form, that it should be understandable to people. She treated it for really what it's become, and that is, it is a popular art form. And she did not make the kind of distinctions that we would hear nowadays between film on the one hand and movies on the other. Like Gordon Craig said about theater, that the essence of theater is puppetry. I love that. Iris would say something quite the same, that the essence of film would be maybe, slapstick, Tom Mix, Mickey Mouse, something you can really love and get involved in. And she saw it as an empathetic kind of experience where you walk in another person's shoes for quite a long time and learn what their life is like. And you can go places and through time. And she saw this plasticity where you could cut back and forth between centuries or among centuries and into the future. Or you could go to Egypt and then jump to America at the same time, and saw that this could not be done on stage, that it doesn't work in novels where you have to get inside the head of the character, but that you can read the mind of the character just by looking at their face. And so she saw it as a very humanistic art form that deserved respect, deserved enshrinement. And so that led her to want to build what we now call the film world, the museum programs, the film societies, the film festivals, and the university film programs.
She first came to the United States as a writer and writing about film. When did she shift to this idea of we need to create institutions in the United States to collect this art form?
She met Alfred Barr, the first director of the Museum of Modern Art, at the Askew Salon. Now, all New Yorkers, listen carefully. This is the crucible of modernism. This is where modern dance comes from, where modern music, film as an art form, new theater, in the personages of people like Paul Bowles for music, or Virgil Thompson for music, Lincoln Kirstein, the founder of the New York Ballet, who brought Balanchine to America, or A.E. Chick Austin from Hartford, the first major modernist museum director. They all met pretty much weekly at Kirk and Constance Askew's apartment. And they exchanged ideas about what could be done and what needed to be done. And in their conversations, the seeds of modernism were planted and began to grow. And Barr had already thought that there should be a film department at the museum. But he hadn't the money to do it. He didn't know who could do it. But when he met Iris, he knew that she had co-founded the London Film Society in 1925. She wrote extensively. She had a wonderful hand as a writer, brilliant conversationalist. And Alfred Barr knew that this was the person who could do it. And so he got support from Nelson Rockefeller, John Hay Whitney, the Rockefeller Foundation. They invited a proposal, and Iris and a man that she fatefully took up with, whose name is John Abbott, co-wrote a proposal accepted by them, and resulting in the foundation and the founding of a separate corporation. That's very interesting. A separate corporation affixed to the Museum of Modern Art. All of it stock owned by the museum. But in a sense, it was grafted onto the side of the museum, and it gave them a certain kind of independence that became fateful as Abbott rose to power and ultimately, in a sense, replaces Alfred Barr as the top dog at MoMA. That's part of the story, too. It's an unexpected development in my research, but it's most interesting.
Museum politics.
Yes.
Yes. Iris Berry, as she's forming, the first curator of that MoMA collection of film, mm-hmm. when we think about the canon of great film history, mm-hmm. what was Iris Berry's contribution in how we think of what a great film was?
Well, she saved the film for us to see when in 1938, she co-founded FIOF, the Fédération Internationale du Archive du Film, the International Film Archives. It's based in Belgium, founded in New York in 1938, to bring into a pool and to share archives material among Sweden, France, the Cinémathèque in France, the Russians, Poles, and to preserve examples of great achievement. And this brought in 1936 and 7 into New York print materials for very consequential films that now we all know. The works of Murnau, for example, The Last Laugh, Emil Jannings' great performance, one of the best acting performances ever made. And it brought into New York Fritz Lang's work, and from America, the entire D.W. Griffith collection in one fell swoop. It made New York the trove for the study of films, and then out of that collection, they struck prints to send to college campuses. And so from the late 30s on, we began to grow film study nationwide and all over the nation, depending upon this archive. And that's where the canon comes from.
And it all started with Iris Berry, She's brassy girl from Birmingham, England.
The mother of film art.
The book is Lady in the Dark, Iris Berry and the Art of Film. Author Robert Sitton, thank you so much for joining us.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.